Good morning. Can everybody hear me? Yes. Okay. Thumbs up. So, welcome to the week of Chukat in Jewish time. And our Torah portion opens this week like this. This is the statute of the Torah, which the Lord commanded, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel and have them take for you a perfectly red, unblemished cow upon which no yoke was laid." So, how many times have you seen a red cow? That's the first problem. Let's see. "And you shall give it to Eleazar the priest, Kohen. And he shall take it outside the camp and slaughter it in his presence. And the cow shall be burned. Then a ritually clean person gathers its ashes and takes them and places them outside the camp." Wow. Take a breath. So chukat is about impurities, obstacles, irrevocable mistakes, loss, and death. In short, it's about life and death and wanting what you can't have. It's about finding a red heifer without a blemish or a defect, something that may not even exist, and burning it to ashes to purify humans who have touched death. And how do you become pure again after touching a dead body? And the parasha is also about Miriam's death and the hardship her absence causes the people because her well of water is gone, causing a great thirst among the Israelites. It's about the Israelites' terrors of dying expressed in constant complaint about their thirst, mourning the day they left the comforts, the imagined comforts of slavery in Egypt. So, doesn't that all sound like just a typical day in a life of our own lives? But then God tells Moshe and Aaron how to get water for the people by speaking to a rock. Okay. And instead, Moses strikes the rock as if something in him has snapped after his sister's death. He speaks harshly to the people and he hits the rock as the water pours out. So God punishes Moshe and Aaron for following their own feelings instead of God's instructions. Right. And you could say that God's instructions is how we're being guided in this moment. How often do we follow our own preferences instead of however God may be trying to guide us or guide us? God's directions are ways to get back into connection with the source of our being and with the elusive reality of the interconnection with the all. When we feel cut off, bereft, inconsolable, we return to notice being in this form of a body, and this formlessness of she who breathes us into being with every breath. Yah, yah. Breathing in, yah, breathing out. When we lose that connection and snap at someone or act out of our own hurt, we become wounded herders instead of wounded healers. Our source, our sorrow and fear gets expressed by lashing out. That triggers a chain of consequences that feels punishing, not least of which may be losing the other's love and respect. And so, yes, God snaps back with a decree that neither Moshe nor Aaron will be able to enter the land. How could that be? After all those years of faithful service, how can a single outburst outweigh so many years of conscientiously implementing God's guidance? And now God commands, Moshe, take Aaron up the mountain and strip him of his priestly vestments. Put them on Aaron's son, Eleazar. And then Aaron dies. Moshe has lost his two closest and incomparable companions in one fell swoop. Now the Israelites must cross over other people's lands to get to the promised land. But those peoples won't allow them to pass inside their territory. Those people even attack them to prevent them from reaching the land. Wow, as I'm saying those words, I'm thinking about the election. Oh man, okay. But God helps the people destroy their enemies. There's something inside of me saying, please, 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 God, destroy my enemies, which is not a great thing, I guess, to be trying to achieve, but okay. I think that's why this part of the parsha that's so harsh definitely describes an incredible part of our lives as humans. So if you scratch below the surface of the Torah story, it may sound like an ordinary day in our own lives. We're faced with places to go, people to see, things to do, and yet we hit obstacles that take actions that backfire and are undermined by our own reactivity, letting ourselves fall under the spell of our desires and aversions. And a sense of being thwarted and aghast at the atrocities of daily news, or of simply not getting our own way, or just simply arriving at old age, where we, who are accustomed to helping others, now suddenly and incredibly find ourselves in deepening need of others' help. Or seeing our loved ones hurt and floundering, or having this world refuse to go the way we desperately want it to, cleansed of war and hatred, cruelty. Our minds are easily startled, causing us to fear or fantasize or rail against changing conditions beyond our control. Circumstances beyond our control that tear up our plans and hopes for this moment, this day, this life, this world. The unfolding of reality, one of the many names for the divine, thwarts our intended and tender agendas. We're bombarded by the drama and the trauma of human error and terror, inescapable, arbitrary killing and political failure becomes our daily news diet, pretty thin gruel. So in the midst of this drama of life, of wanting this and not wanting that, of confusion or fear, or rage or apathy, or yearning or dread, how do we return to the home of our soul? How do we reconnect to our true nature that often seems as elusive and as unblemished as a red heifer without a defect? What's the simplest constant of our life that is always there, always accessible, that is spacious enough to meet terror and the exquisite beauty and loves of our life? We often talk about how breath and body are our reliable friends. So today, I want to introduce an aspect of reality that we can tune into in any given moment for respite, perspective, interconnection, or renewal. It's something I learned from a young, enlightened being, Beth Resnick, who co-taught a week-long retreat with Rabbi David of Blessed Memory and Shoshana Cooper many, many years ago in Pennsylvania. Beth learned a form of meditation from another young, realized being, Adyashanti, who teaches what his guru taught him. And that is to dwell in the sense of I am. So now, I've done this with some of you before, maybe a long time ago. And I want us to go back into our mode of meditation for a little while. In a comfortable posture, seated, grounded, uplifted, comfortable. So first, notice the fact that you exist. It is the one thing that you can know for certain in this life. That notwithstanding people who think we're living in a holograph. So even if you deny your existence, you have to be in order to deny it. When you go to the root of your sense of yourself, it opens to a universal consciousness. Adyashanti quips, earnestness isn't a kind of energy like, okay, I'm ready to storm the gates of heaven and start meditating 5 hours a day. Earnestness is different from enthusiasm. And he quotes his teacher, Nisargadatta, who says, what is it that we love and cherish? What is it that we love and cherish? Nisargadatta asks us to go back to that state of pure being, where the I am is still in its purity before it gets contaminated with I am this or I am that. Your burden is of a false self-identification. Abandon it. Abandon all of them. Those false self-identifications. Nisargadatta quotes his guru who told him, trust me, I tell you, you are divine. Take it as the absolute truth. Your joy is divine. Your suffering is divine. All comes from God. Remember it always. So now I invite us to sample for a few minutes together this I am meditation. So we start by thinking back to getting an image of us as we were as a child. Your body was smaller. Your thoughts were different than now. The conditions of your life were different. But whatever was happening, there was a sense that I am. Your thoughts were like this. Life was like that. You were running. You were doing this. You were happy. You were sad. Whatever was happening, the simplest constant that there was a sense of me, of I am. You became a teenager. Your body was different. You felt like this or that. Your thoughts were this or that. But there was still the enduring sense of I am. The conditions and thoughts were different, but the consciousness of me was still there. I am. So let yourself go into memory of yourself in the past, where everything is different, your size, the people around you, your thoughts. Yet still there is the constant, that sense of I am. There's consciousness of being. Just tune in right now to the felt sense of being, the sense of I am. This is the constant. Just tune into it. See what it's like to say out loud, softly, or loud, because we're not near each other. Say out loud, I am. Try it. I am. So please say it softly to yourself each time I say it out loud. I am. I am. I am. No need to know anything. No need to do anything. Just resting. Just resting in your own being, in your own sense of your own being. I am. I am. Thoughts may come and go, yeses or no's, bodily sensations, reflections, evaluations, and still, through it all, there's this sense of I am. I am. Just resting in a felt sense of being. I am. The senses of I am can come and go. I feel sad, or I imagine having a problem. The body may contract, the body may relax, and all the while, being is present. So again, say it after me. I am. I am. Simply here, simply present. Just rest here in this felt sense of I am. Nothing needs to be done. Beingness is indiscriminate. Beingness is always here. I am. I am. Here I am. Whatever it is, however life is showing itself to you in this moment, however it's appearing, being is still here. I am. Perhaps the sense of being notices voices arising inside oneself. Being can ask the voices, "What ails you? What is it you want or need?" And the voices call out and hold them with tenderness and compassion. Yes, this is the way things are. Yes, I'm sorry. That's how it is. Or wow, that's how it happened. And it couldn't be otherwise. So just let's rest for another minute or two in that felt sense of being until you hear the bell. recording stopped?